the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Charlie McCarron.
I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
And I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
And this is the first episode in our new series on card-shedding games. Our first game we played here is Scout. And this is a newish card game that is a card-shedding game, which in another way to say that is you're trying to get rid of all the cards in your hand. And often these games have cards with numbers on them, and you're making runs and sets, and or you could be, there's a lot of classic card games that use a regular poker deck to do card shedding. But the idea in Scout that makes it unique is that all these number cards actually have numbers on the top of the card that are different than numbers on the bottom of the card. And so when you get your hand, you're going to be deciding if you want to play with the cards on flipped one way, or you can reverse your whole hand upside down and play with those numbers. And the other thing that's different than most card games is that you can't rearrange your hand at all. So it's got this cool effect of, okay, so I have this set of cards in my hand, and when you play a card, you can take it from anywhere in your hand. You might take a card out of the middle of your hand, so that then there's this gap in your hand, and those cards that were next to the card you took out can now be a better either run or like pair or triple or something like that. And so this the other kind of subset of card shedding games is ladder climbing games. And Scout is a ladder climbing game, which means that, say I play a three, single three card. Now, Trevor could try to beat that with
a four.
A four, yeah, four or higher.
Or
you can also say you did a run of one and two together. Ooh. And that would actually also beat the three. Or you could do a pair of ones. So generally, you're trying to get more cards in your set that you're playing. Or the higher cards. Yep. And duplicates, so like pairs, triples, always beat runs of the same amount of cards. So the other little twist here is that, so at some point it's going to keep climbing up and up until you can't play anything from your hand.
Because you always have to play something bigger than the last.
Yeah. Yeah, which means you're getting more cards out there, higher cards.
Yeah.
So ultimately you get stopped.
Yep. And when you get to that point, that's when you have to scout, the name of the game. And to scout, you take one of the cards from the player's previously played cards from either side of their set. And then you put that back in your hand anywhere on either side. So that's another way that you can use it to your advantage to like make your hand better.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very clever game. And then the game ends a couple of ways. Either when your hand is fully empty from cards, and then everyone else is going to get negative points based on how many cards they have in their hand. And then the other way is if someone plays a really good set and it can't be beaten even after players scout from them and it comes back around to you. And
basically every other player scouts.
Yep.
And no one plays again.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. There's only one or two other. I mean, I guess you also get points anytime you beat someone. You take their cards they played as points. And if someone scouts from your hand, you also get a point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you're rewarded for playing large runs or sets that can't be beat.
Yeah. And then the other fun thing, once per game, you get a scout and show, which is you get to scout from their hand and then also play. So the timing of that is really crucial. Sometimes you wait too long and you can't use it because someone went out, or maybe you go too early and then
you really need it later.
You really needed it later. Yeah. So Scout is a great game. I really like it.
Yeah, it's super cute. I really appreciate, you know, outside of me trying to cheat for a while there, I think it's a really intuitive and great game. Like, I really wish I had remembered specifically that you had to do the whole hand and not just individual cards before you locked everything in. I did try to cheat that way.
Yeah. We'll forgive you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I guess, so the first thing maybe to talk about is the cards have, like, two different numbers mm-hmm. on them. And I'm wondering, like, what does that add to the game, do you think? Mm.
I think it gives you some agency over your starting hand, and your starting hand is really important, obviously, because that's going to be the whole thing for at least that round until you start adding more cards into it. So just giving you that binary option is really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that is a good point. Like, it doesn't impact the gameplay all that much.
No.
Other than giving you options for when you scout a card.
Yeah, that's true. When you scout a card, it means you have like twice as many options as you otherwise would have.
Yeah.
And also, I guess you're not going to get stuck in the cycle of using the same numbers again and again.
Right.
Yeah.
If you're just taking whatever people are putting out.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because now I've played a follow-up game by the same designer, Kai Kajino, called Dinup. And it also, the original title was Revolve. But the idea with that one, similar idea, there's numbers on the top and bottom of the cards.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing some sort of like card shedding and similar idea. But anytime you take a card from either like your cards get beaten and you have to take them back to your hand, whenever that happens, you have to flip them. So that one really feels like that.
It needs top and bottom. Sides, yeah.
So yeah, that's another really cool one that similar to Scout, but it's a good like pairing for
sure.
If you've tried Scout. Yeah.
So one of my favorite parts, and I'm actually going to have this be my takeaway so I can get it before you guys take this away from me. but honestly, with this game specifically, I really appreciate the scout function, and that the scout function not only gives you a new card into your hand, but the person you just took the card from, it gives them a point, and it feels very, you know, mutually beneficial in that way, right? But that person could still win, so you have to be careful about, you know, scouting too much.
It's a positive interaction.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, taking a card into your hand, it might set up a great turn later.
Right.
But in the short term, it's kind of bad for you.
Because you're trying to shed. You're trying to get rid of cards.
You're trying to shed, and now you're gaining cards. Again, that might be strategic.
Right.
Might give you something later. But in the short term, it's bad for you. But it still feels good.
Yeah, you're getting something. Which, you know, just intrinsically, we like to get things. Even though the object of the game is to lose everything.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, it doesn't feel like a bad thing necessarily.
It's a natural silver lining built into the game. Because in a shedding game, picking up cards, you're losing progress.
Right.
And normally in games, losing progress feels very bad. But
if it gives you access to like either having more cards in a run or, you know, like having or linking two runs together, that can feel really good, much more so than like giving the other person a point or adding to your deck or your hand. So yeah, it's really interesting how dynamic that one moment can be, depending on the situation.
Yeah, and the timing of everything is very interesting in this game, because like sometimes it is worth scouting, even if you can beat something, just to get that like really good run in your hand.
Well, especially before anyone else is done with their hands. Like, oh, I need to do this early, so that I can actually get the chain I need.
Yep.
You're sort of preparing a trap.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, the more you play, the more you start to notice like, ooh, someone's been scouting a bunch. Like, they're probably going to try to win by
big play.
A huge play.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do think this game is best with four players. I've played it with three and five and four.
There is a lot of pressure to play in a three-player game.
Yeah. 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 Because basically, like, because of this win condition of playing a huge hand, and then you almost, we were kind of joking about, like, it sort of becomes semi-cooperative at that point. Because, yeah. Like, do we tell, like, you have to coordinate a little bit to make sure you can still...
Stay in the game
and not let that person win.
Yeah. Can you take this? Because if you could take this, like, I need you to take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and the round ending early in that way is also kind of interesting because the player who played the large run,
mm-hmm.
They might still have cards in their hand, but they don't lose any points for that.
Right.
So it's kind of an extra bonus for winning that way, so you don't have to use the rest of your hand.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I like that it makes things varied a bit more. Right, mm-hmm. there's more strategies you can go for. The subtracting points from your hand thing is, I think, a good way to reward players for going out first. In some games, when you go out first, you get, you know, like some flat amount of points, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you get a 5-point bonus if you're the first to reach the objective, and then we'll score these other things. But the thing about that is somebody else might have been really close and then they missed it, and someone else right. might have been far away. The thing I like about subtracting points is that if you were really close to the goal, you are rewarded proportionally for that. And if you were right. far away, you are punished for
maybe
that.
Maybe getting negative points.
Right. Yeah. And we've seen that before in a couple of games, like Dutch Blitz.
Yeah.
Of course, you get negative points for cards left in your hand. I think... In Scrabble also, in Scrabble not only do you get negative points, but the points are given to the person who went out. So it's sort of, you know, both sides of the coin, right? The players are individually rewarded or punished based on how well they did, and the player who went out first gets a bonus, an extra bonus, which I think works quite well in that game. But even just subtracting points is pretty good. So I think that's a good way to handle bonuses for going out first.
Yeah. Scout's a great game. The one downside is now every time I play a game, I have to think, like, wait, am I able to rearrange your hand?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you now have to ask that in a game like this.
And I mean, we have seen that in, like, Bonanza.
Yep.
Also.
Bonanza.
The fixed hand order.
Not Bonanza.
Yeah. I've definitely tried. That was my takeaway a while ago when I played both of these games. Like, I wanted to make a game that had you can't rearrange your hand. Like, I've tried that a little bit. But yeah, it's cool because you not only get the benefit of a random hand, but the randomness of their sort also, like, it makes it even more replayable, kind of.
Oh, sure.
In some ways.
The cards matter and the order also matters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think a sign of a good game is when you look at your hand and you get excited about how this might play out.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, there's some games where you get a hand of cards and maybe it actually doesn't matter that much. Like, sometimes Trick Takers are like that, where it's like, okay,
a lot of middle of the ground, like, oh, yeah. I'll take some, I won't take some, we'll see how it goes.
It can also be fun to get a hand and think, oh my goodness, this is a complete disaster.
And then turn it around.
Yeah, like I think people say that's the experience in ARCs a lot, which, you know, it's sort of a trick-taking action selection mechanic. But so in that game, your hand determines what actions you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or that you have available, and so you get your hand and you're like, this is not what I want.
Yeah.
I have to deal with it, and that can be fun.
Yeah, I think that is my takeaway, is now that I'm thinking about it, like, how can you make someone's first hand help them envision the strategy they're going to try to play for the entire round?
Yeah.
Because that's the beauty of this game, is, like, you look at it and you're like, okay, so if I got rid of this four first, then the sevens could be paired up, and, like, which there's, like, usually several different strategies you could try for.
Yeah.
And sometimes it only takes like one scout to like pop something in the middle to make something work. Or
oh yeah,
yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah, yeah. We haven't talked that much yet about the, what is it called, scout and show.
Oh yeah,
the once per game scout and show option. I think that that's pretty interesting, right? It's a once per game action you can take to basically scout a card and then play a set of cards at the same time. And in our games, we were, you know, kind of trying to save it a little bit.
Yeah.
Because once you've played it, you are much more vulnerable because you no longer have that option if somebody plays a high set. At the same time, it is, I mean, you know, it's a very powerful option that you want to use at some point because it's kind of a waste if you don't. You know, you could, at the very least, you can make the set larger. And it, you know, it got me thinking about once per game options in other games, and like, what is it that that makes once per game actions compelling?
Yeah, I feel like we've had this in maybe a few other games we've played. I can't remember off the top of my head, but
sure,
yeah.
Yeah, I definitely like these.
Yeah, I mean, in this game, and I think frequently, the once per game option is to get around a limitation, often a limitation in actions, right? Because in this game, there are two different actions you can take on your turn, and this lets you do both of them, which is very powerful and also gets around a common frustration, I think, in games with very restricted actions. Like, imagine in chess, this is a little crazy, but imagine if in chess you had the ability once per game to take two moves.
Yeah.
In
two different pieces, maybe. Not the same piece twice.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Maybe two different pieces.
Just so we're not going crazy.
Sure. but, like, that would be
huge.
That'd
be super powerful.
Yeah.
Because it's not just using that ability. As long as you have that ability, other people have to factor that into what you're doing. So it's kind of like... while you're saving that power, you're still able to use it to exert influence on the game, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So
I'm looking at right now, we talked about this before we started, Mindbug, the game, Garfield game, that's essentially like one deck Magic the Gathering kind of thing, where you're both drawing from, I think, the same deck. Or maybe you do have, I don't know. It's been a while, but the key to it is like there's all these creatures that you're playing that don't cost anything, and they're all over the place in terms of power level. But the trick is that twice per game you can use your mind bugs to steal from the opponent. So if you play a super big creature, I could use my mind bug right away. Yeah. But I might be thinking, well, Trevor might have an even bigger one in his hand. Maybe I should save it. And that's a, like once or twice per game thing that just totally makes the whole game work.
Yeah. So it kind of drives up the conflict between like those choices, like, oh, I could do this now, but if I do it now, I'm not going to have it anymore. And that, like that future opportunity cost is just gone. It's like, oh man, that's good. I like it.
Yeah. And I guess in thinking about game design, you know, players will sometimes complain that they find action limitations to be too restrictive. Like, you know, oh, there's this thing I want to do and I can't do it because I have a limit on how many actions. And I think there are a bunch of reasons why limiting actions is quite good. But the thing that I kind of realized in playing this about Scout and Show, or just once per game actions in general, is they make the player feel like they have a way to do the thing they want to do, which is do both of the actions. But they only get it once per game. But once they've used it, well, that was their choice. So it's on them. It's not on the designer for making the game too restrictive. So my takeaway, I think, is that you can use once per game abilities to get around these common player complaints where they say, oh, this is too restrictive. When, you know, the restriction is good for the game, but then...
I hear you. I understand. You can do it once.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's kind of enough.
Yeah, because it is.
Then it's on them if they use it.
Especially with how fast these rounds go, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're pretty short. If it was half hour, 45-minute game and you get one use,
right.
It's like, okay, maybe that feels a little less powerful, a little more restrictive. But yeah, I think for quicker rounds, having that one big power, that's phenomenal. Yeah.
And the nice thing in this one, it's rules you already know. Versus like sometimes once per game things maybe would be a weird rule that you have to look up.
Sure.
How does this work? Or
yeah.
You might forget about it because you're not like doing it normally. That's
right. That's a great point. I think using once per game abilities to get around normal restrictions probably works a bit better than using them to do some other unique thing.
Like a unique, completely tangential.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, agree. Mind Bug is that, but
yeah.
The whole game is centered around it. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Cool. You guys have any other scout thoughts or
scout thoughts?
Card shedding thoughts?
You know, I really just appreciate kind of the strategy around it. Yeah, like everything we've been saying, you know, mostly around not being limited to how many cards you can play, only limited by what you have in your hand. I think that's just a really neat thing. You're constantly thinking about it and seeing what's being played. You're constantly kind of engaged with what's going on, which you don't often get with a lot of card games. Usually you're just waiting for your turn or waiting for the next thing. But like, you're kind of invested in the story that's unfolding in front of you to make sure that you can actually set up, okay, they just played three cards. What do I have? Do I have three cards that I can play, or do I have to scout? If I'm going to scout, what can I do? So you're constantly kind of picking apart what's going on.
Yeah. Or do you even only have one card left? So, and it's kind of like a built-in catch-up for people. They kind of, if you know you only have one card, then people can block you from winning.
Right. But if someone
have to scout.
Someone does a run of three, you have one card left and you have one of those cards, gives you a pair and you suddenly win.
Yeah,
it's great storytelling there.
I think it is very important that, you know, you can play multiple cards at once. Because otherwise, you know, if you could only play one card at a time, it would be hopeless once you're behind.
Right. And it's interesting, like with card shedding, it really feels like you want to have the option to play down more than one card.
Absolutely.
Even if it's a higher risk, even if it's a higher, you know, cost.
You know, it's interesting because that makes me think of Uno all of a sudden, which of course is another classic card shedding game. But in Uno, I think you can only play one card per turn, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure.
And the variance comes from, well, you can get stuck.
Draw four.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, Uno's super successful, but I don't think that's great. I think if you're shedding cards, you want to have options to shed a lot of cards at once.
If you're thinking strategically and wanting that strategic analysis, then having the option to do more than one card, I think is great.
I mean, I think it's necessary. Otherwise, the game just feels flat.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, that's Scout. And tune in next time for...
I know you don't.
I don't know.
That is the name of the game.
Sorry. Yeah. Okay, that makes more sense.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.